Well, my special guest in the studio was born here in Sydney into a family of jazz musicians. He began studying classical piano from the age of five and was exposed to a wide variety of music during his childhood through his mother's vast record collection and the rest of his musical family. At the age of 17, in 2005, he won a BBM Jazz Award that sent him to study and play with musicians in London. And on his return to Sydney, he completed a Bachelor of Music, majoring in Jazz Piano, and a Bachelor of Arts, both degrees earned with distinction from the University of New South Wales. As the leader of his own trio, he's about to release his second album, Casey Golden. Welcome to Now's the Time.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Well, Casey, when you say you were born into a family of jazz musicians, that's somewhat underplaying it. You were born into Australia's jazz aristocracy, really, the Barnard family. Bob Barnard, who we had on this program a few years back now, is your grandfather.
He is, yeah.
So the old cliche about having to step out of the shadows of a figure of that's looming large, was that the case for you with regards to your legendary grandfather?
I've never thought about that, to be honest. He was always part of my life, that most, like a lot of members of my family were musicians, and I knew that Bob was famous and he always sounded amazing when I was a kid. Yeah, like I think just because of his personality and the type of guy he is, it never seemed like I had to prove myself or try and step away from that. Like, because if I was doing that, I'm still a jazz musician, whether I'm playing the same type of jazz, so I haven't stepped too far from the tree.
Well, obviously music was a part of your household, but tell us what the process was like for you growing up and hearing that music who was your inspiration at home, I guess, supporting you going down that track?
The family was always like the extended family, like Bob and my uncles, Adam and Tony, who are also both great musicians. They were kind of always around and whenever there was a gathering, not so much recently, but at the time, I feel like there was always a lot of music being played. But day to day, it was my mum for sure, and my brother. My brother's just a couple years older than me, so he was kind of in the same boat as I was, but he was always kind of showing me stuff and helped me out. And my mum, like you mentioned, is like a huge music fan and aficionado, so she was always playing, always had music on, mainly classical, I'd say, but a lot of jazz as well. And she was always kind of into making my brother and I active listeners. And you know, when I was like 4 years old, she'd ask me who the composer was on whoever was playing on the radio. I had no idea at the time, but eventually I did. So, you know, I'm really appreciative of that.
So is that those little details that have stuck in your mind and obviously triggered an interest for you?
Absolutely, yeah.
What about the regime for practice? Was she strict in that regard?
Oh, I'd say I was the same as most kids, just didn't really, like, I liked playing an instrument, but I didn't really care that much, and I had to be told to practice, you know, until probably my early teens, I'd say, when I got involved in playing some other types of music. And then I still didn't want to practice my classical stuff as much, but I was more into it, you know.
So who are your major influences on the piano? Are they necessarily piano players?
Well, like, I suppose there's a lot of piano players, definitely. There's a lot of non-piano players too. But as far as piano players go, I'd say, like, it changes every week, to be honest. But guys that really made an impression, like, I've gone through, as most musicians have, heaps of phases where you're obsessed with one person, you know. Chick Corea was a big one. Kenny Kirkland, Aaron Goldberg, you know, all the obvious ones like Herbie Hancock, Oscar Peterson, Phineas Newborn Jr., Brad Mehldau, heaps of them. And then, yeah, it's kind of, you know, over the years, I still love all those people as much as ever, but it's more your listening kind of gets narrowed into, or I suppose my listening's wider, but your kind of perception of the road you want to go down narrows a lot more, you know.
Would I be correct in guessing you're listening to a lot more European trios now than what
you were? That's definitely a part of it. I get that a lot, to be honest. I don't listen to as much as people think, but I definitely do. Like, I'm a big fan of Helgelien, if you've heard him, his trio, Scandinavian trio. That'd be my favorite thing happening out of Europe, I think. But yeah, lots of them, Todd Gustafsson, Ilmalecki, bands like that. I've checked out, and I do, like I said, a lot of listening. So I've listened to a lot of stuff that I might not have really latched onto, but I'm aware of it. But Bill and Ed in the trio, they're they're the guys that turned me on to most of that stuff. And they've listened to that heaps, and they kind of grew up with it and were like listening to it all through uni and stuff. So they definitely brought a lot of that to the band, I think.
Let's talk about the scene a little bit now, Casey, because, well, you're relatively new to the scene, I suppose. This trio's been around for 5 years now. But there are a lot of talented pianists in Australia.
Absolutely.
In the jazz genre. Are performing opportunities in Australia increasing or decreasing?
I feel in the very recent past, it's increasing, just the last year or two. When I first started playing jazz gigs around, which was maybe 7 years ago or so, it felt like there was only a few gigs that you could be doing. Of course, at the time, I definitely knew a lot less and knew less people as well, which plays a part. But I feel like the last year or two with some new places like Foundry, 616 opening, and just a lot of smaller venues being open to stuff, it's looking like it's on the rise. So, you know, I hope it continues.
Casey, tell us a little bit about the title track from the album called Outliers.
This one was one of those songs where you just kind of sat down and started playing, and I'd written the song within 20 minutes. You know, I wish they all kind of happened like that. But I kind of wrote it. The name I've had in mind for a while for a few different things, but this is where it kind of first started to feel right. And it was just kind of a song for us to blow over more than anything else. Like, it might not sound like that. That was kind of what I was going for in the first place. And then it kind of, over time of gigging it and practicing it, it kind of evolved to what you're about to hear on the album.
Does composing music come easy to you? Obviously, you said that one did, but normally?
It varies, to be honest. I tend to need a deadline to help me with it, and it's pretty slow most of the time. Like I said before, that one came easy, which it did. And that's happened to me maybe two or three other times where I've come up with something I'm actually pleased with. But yeah, most of the time I'll have something, or I'll be trying to do something, and I'll end up, I've got a folder of just kind of bits and pieces, just scraps that are something, but they're not a full song yet, and they need bits and pieces here or there. And I'll tend to work on stuff, and then after a while of like consciously really trying to work on writing, I'll end up, the scraps will kind of form themselves into two or three tunes. Another thing I do is I often write the titles before any music's been written. I heard that Ambrose Akinmusiri, this trumpet player from New York, does that, or has done that. And it's kind of good, I think. Like, it's helped me because it gives you a bit of a vibe to stick with what you're going for, and gives you a bit of non-musical information to kind of adhere to, you know?
You referring back to a reference point,
yeah,
during the process.
Absolutely, and it's just like, it could musically make sense, but it might not feel right for the title and the vibe you're kind of envisioning. So if it doesn't feel right, you just move on to something new, you know?
That makes a lot of sense, because when I listen to this music, there's punctuation in there. So, you're actually, it's like hearing musical sentences almost.
Excellent, that's what we want.
Sometimes it's difficult for me, I'm not sure about the listener, but to distinguish between the composed and the non-composed, or the improvised. And so that tells me you are obviously a great improviser as well, because you're listening intently to try and hear, okay, is he improvising here, or is this composing?
Yeah, that's interesting, because we get that a bit, actually. And I think it's much more than just me. I think it's the guys in the band equally, absolutely, because obviously I try and, like, I'll write stuff and bring it to them, and they really do put their own mark on it. And we really think of it as a collective sort of group. We're all kind of equal. And I personally think it's great that people can't tell when this composing stuff and improvising begins. And I think that's the reason I think of that as a compliment. It's just, it makes me feel like we sound like a unit, and that's always been our number one concern over everything, over solos and tunes and whatever. As long as we sound like we're on the same page, then it's working, you know?
Casey, we mentioned at the top that you had been playing the piano since the age of five. You started off studying classical music. Can you recall and possibly describe your earliest experience of the realization of improvisation when you discovered that moment?
To be honest, I really can't. Like, I wish I could, but kind of like I was talking about before, I kind of always, like, as like I've got jazz musicians in the family, it was always something I knew kind of existed. Like, I hear other stories of other musicians not, you know, knowing that was possible. But I guess I kind of always did, and sort of took it as a given. And didn't think of it as that remarkable until I was much older, you know, like probably too old, to be honest. Like, I should have realized it earlier. But yeah, unfortunately, I haven't got a nice story of when that kind of hit me.
Let's talk about the trio, Bill Williams on the bass and Ed Rodriguez on the drums. What particular qualities of their playing especially attracts you?
Well, both of them are very reactive players. They listen like amazing ears on both of them, you know. So nothing goes unheard that you do, and hopefully it's, and not that you have to react to everything in a music situation, but you can feel the support there, whether they're, you know, off on a tangent or if they're like right there, like kind of playing what you're playing. You know that they're kind of with you and they're hearing you. So that's a huge thing. Another thing, because Bill and Ed have been playing together for years. Like, they lived together for about 6 years before I met them when they were living in Canberra. So when I first played with them, I was really amazed by their kind of rapport that they had, just the two of them, and wanted to kind of build that and be a part of that, as I like to think that we have now and continue to do now. But I think that they're kind of the main things. Like, they're total individuals too with on their instruments, which I think should be the goal of any improvising musician. But yeah, pretty much just that, and their personalities are absolutely there when they play, and that's all you can ask for from anyone, I think.
Because this is your second formation of a trio, isn't it?
It is, yes.
What can we expect then in the years to come? I know you've got a live recording coming out later in this year.
We do, yeah. That'll be a few months down the line, recorded at Bennett's Lane in Melbourne, around the same time as Outliers was recorded, actually. But it's, I think people will find it interesting because it's very different. Like, it's still all the qualities that we as a band, you know, strive to maintain are there, you know. It's a live recording. It's a bit more kind of brash, different songs on it too, which I should mention. And yeah, just a different energy brought to it from being in a live situation. It should be interesting how that's received, I think. But we're really excited about that one as much as this, but when the time comes, I guess.
Now, there's something unique about the trio, isn't there? And certainly in the last 20 years, the trio in jazz seems to have thrived where maybe other larger ensembles haven't. Why do you think that is? What is the appeal of a trio, and what has, you know, bands like EST and Brad Meldow's trio and Keith Jarrett's, why have they remained so popular?
Well, I personally think the trio has been, like as you said, really, like, throughout the history of jazz, it's been a huge thing. It's been, like, for me as a piano player, pretty much my go-to thing that I want to listen to, at least especially when I was kind of starting out. I think a big part of it as well is just it's easier to tour with three people than with seven people or whatever, you know, and that's a huge part of it. And I think the more people you add to an ensemble, the more room there is for someone to not be, how do I phrase this? You know, like, you can have a much closer relationship when it's just three of you, because there's three people that have to be on the same page. The more voices you add to that, the more difficult it gets. And I don't know, apart from that, I certainly agree, like, especially bands like the Bad Plus and Gerald Clayton's trio and some bands from the last few years like that, that are really just, you know, super within the tradition, but unmistakably who they are and doing something new. Robert Glasper is another one. You know, I don't know, there's some mysterious kind of thing about it, but, like, hopefully we can contribute to that tradition in our own small way, you know?
Long live the trio.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I noticed the lack of liner notes here, Casey. Is that because you want the music to speak for itself, or...?
More or less, to be honest, yeah. I didn't know what to say besides listen to the music, so I just left it.
So you going to tell us anything about us or them?
This was one where I had a title before any music, and it's actually the oldest of the songs that we play. This is the first one, original, I wrote specifically for this band. So, yeah.
Casey Golden, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Frank. Oh, thanks for having me.